The following is part of the A1-Wrestling.com podcast family.
Hi-de-ho and cheerios, ladies and gentlemen. This is Seth, a.k.a. Xandrax, the mayor of Geekville and the host of the Geekville podcast. Welcoming you to another episode. I think we're up to episode 147 of the Geekville podcast. And we're back to our regular format. Thank you for the positive feedback and the memories we created or maybe dug up with the last two Star Trek episodes. But we're back to the regular format. We're going to talk a little bit of news, and we're also going to look into the fall 2016 season. We're going to talk some Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We're going to talk the CW DC shows that we usually talk about, and some new shows like Timeless and Conviction. And once again, I don't have to do it alone. Coming at you from the Asylum in South Kakalaki, the crazy train himself, Mr. Jonathan Bullock.
All aboard, ladies and gentlemen. It has been a long time. I mean, it's been crazy around here, literally. And I haven't been around. I mean, like REO Speedwagon, we were riding the storm out here for a while there. So it got kind of a little hectic down here in the Carolinas and Florida and Georgia, you know? Y'all might have heard about that. It kind of made the news, I think, didn't it? I'm not sure.
Well, I think it takes more than a hurricane to take down a pro wrestler, so.
Yeah, well, it took cancer and a heart attack to take down Lemmy. It's going to take probably something similar to take one of us down.
Yeah, it took a heart attack and a car crash to take down the Macho Man. So
there you go. See what I'm saying? We're a hardy bunch. No pun intended.
But first off, let's get into some news.
This week in Geek News.
Doctor Strange is on the verge of release. As of recording, we're about, I think, 3 weeks away from its release. And one thing that we've both noticed, we talked about this off camera and decided to bring it onto the show, the media blitz is all over the place. You kind of can't really go anywhere online or watch any shows or go anywhere in public without seeing some sort of promotion about Doctor Strange. Am I wrong in thinking that?
No, and I think that's pretty much SOP for Disney and any of their products, isn't it?
And Doctor Strange is one of those titles. Even if you're a comic fan, he's not really the first Marvel character that's going to roll off your tongue. And no. I do think that he is one of those characters they never would have made a movie 10 years ago.
No, I totally agree with that.
I think part of it, at least, is how much of a track record Marvel has gotten now. After all the Iron Man and Avengers and the what are now the Disney-owned movie franchises, that now that they've got this great track record and they've even had out-of-left-field hits like Guardians of the Galaxy.
Ant-Man.
That opens up the door to make movies like Doctor Strange and Black Panther.
Right, and I don't think we saw nearly the media blitz for either one of those that we're seeing for Doctor Strange, but like you said, they kind of fall in that same category where they're lesser known by not only mainstream, but even some of your more diehard comic fans. But I also think, contrary to Ant-Man and Guardians of the Galaxy, not to just downplay them as characters and the importance to the comic books and to this particular cinematic universe, Doctor Strange is a real, real heavy hitter in the Marvel Universe. I mean, he's right up there with, I would say, you know, well, he's in the Illuminati. So, you know, him, Reed Richards, Namor,
Xavier.
Cap. Yeah, Xavier. We're talking Tony, bigwigs, you know. If you read the comics, you understand Doctor Strange is, and I think the movie will show this, he's really at the top of a particular aspect of the Marvel Universe, which would be the mystical side, and everything else is underneath him. Just like I think the sci-fi is probably pretty much under Tony and Reed Richards, and everything else is beneath him. So maybe that's why. Maybe it's a combination of the two, you think, maybe while they're doing the media blitz?
I think you're right. And also, Benedict Cumberbatch is an A-list star now.
Yep.
And the fact that they have him attached to this role, and he was a fan favorite to play the role in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think to the general audience, putting Benedict Cumberbatch front and center in the media advertising is a smart move.
And how about Mads Mikkelsen as a character actor going to be in two big movies back to back with this and then Star Wars Rogue One coming out? He's going to have a hot little couple-month run there, looks like, you know. I thought it was neat. Did you catch the one yet? I mean, there have been so many different ones. Like you said, you can't go anywhere without seeing, whether it's social media or the internet or whatever, or regular television, Did you catch the one new ad they have where they actually do mention the Avengers by name and have small clips from the earlier MCU movies? Have you seen that one yet?
Yeah, they said something to the effect of the Avengers defend against global threats or something to that effect. And we
physical threats.
Yeah, and we defend against the I think it was the Mystic.
Right. And it was Wong that was said, if I remember, I think it's Wong that says the line, and that's exactly what it is. So, you know, once again, I've brought this up many times here in a podcast with Kevin Feige saying, this is going to be your entree into the mystical side of the Marvel Universe. That particular clip kind of says it all, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I think I even texted you that this is going to be the first movie that I am going to seek out the IMAX 3D version rather than just kind of go with whatever I have access to. Because most movies, even the Avengers movies, it was a case of, well, I'm perfectly fine watching it in 2D. I don't have to see it in 3D. I don't have to see it in IMAX. This one, I think, is definitely made for that IMAX 3D experience.
You know, it goes back to that Inception comparison we keep making, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know, when I brought it up before, part of the reason the early success of Doctor Strange as a comic title was when it was made in the late 60s. Some people who might take your stance and let's go see this in IMAX 3D, let's hope they're not under any enhancement, shall we say, of the chemical or herbal variety, because that might be an extremely bad experience for them from just what I've seen from the ads. That could be bad.
Yeah, I think you're right. Now, another promotion that hit, unless there's something else you wanted to mention about Doctor Strange.
No, not at all. I'm just, you know me, I'm waiting for it. 3 weeks out now.
The New York Comic Con, they debuted a new trailer for Iron Fist. And we actually got to see Iron Fist in action. We got to see some of the fights. And we get a little bit more grasp on the plot of the story.
Right. You're not that familiar with Iron Fist, the character. Is that correct?
I don't know his history that well. I mean, I know he's a non-Oriental character that learned martial arts, you know, from traveling.
Right. Well, he goes to another dimension called Kowloon, which is, for all intents and purposes, I always equated it to being an English guy to, you know, Shangri-La from, you know, Lost Horizon, the famous novel. But there is some definite parallels there. And if you're a DC fan, non de Parbot, a little bit like that too, you know. So, yeah, I think that did. I definitely think this ad is so much better than the original teaser we got, where it was just the voiceover with the close up of the actor playing Iron Fist, you know, and then he opens his eyes at the end. That's not going to entice anyone to be excited. But this one, from what we saw, looks like it's got what we've come to expect from the Netflix stuff, those awesomely choreographed fight scenes. I mean, you had to be impressed by the fight scenes we saw, didn't you?
Absolutely. And I also think this is one of those cases where you're not going to see any real sort of costume until the final episodes, like what they did with the first season of Daredevil.
Right, right, right. Well, I mean, Danny's Rand, that's the alter ego of Iron Fist. He's one of those characters that, depending on the time frame, they've changed his costume up a lot in the comics, simply because when he came out in the 70s, he had those, you know, super fantastical. You knew what all the comics characters were dressing like in the 70s. It was a little bit over
right,
the top.
Right, yeah, big bell bottoms, a lot of gold.
Yeah, exactly. The big collars, a lot of them, and stuff like that. And then by the time we got around the 90s, they knee-jerked too far the other way, where they weren't wearing costumes at all. Not that dissimilar from that look they've got on Superman now, which I'm not that pleased with. You know, the jeans and shirt, T-shirt, Superman, they're running the New 52 now. Not a fan. But anyway, I digress.
It'll be interesting to see what happens when they do go in the Defenders route, and if they do go the Heroes for Hire route, because it'll be interesting seeing Mike Coulter's Luke Cage and Finn Jones's Danny Rand palling around, you might say.
Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, they're super duper tight in the comic. They're best friends in the comic books and business partners. So it could work. And if they ever get in trouble, there's a pretty good attorney they know that could maybe bail them out of any legal complications they have. Just saying.
Two, actually.
Mm-hmm. Just happens those two happen to be partners, right?
Yeah.
So you're excited for that one then?
Yeah, I'm definitely going to check it out. The trailer said, what, March?
March 17th, which I looked up on the calendar, means that's a Friday. So they're following that trend they've done with every Netflix Marvel property, where it's dropping on a Friday as opposed to a Tuesday, like most, you know, media release dates nowadays. I think maybe that's because they want people to binge. I don't know, but it's following that trend. So
yeah, I think that's the idea. They know people are going to start binging as soon as it's available.
Right. Oh, I have with the last three, with season two of Daredevil with Jessica Jones and Luke Cage, which we'll discuss later in this episode. I started Friday when I got home from doing what I had to do for the day. I sat down, turned on my Netflix, and the next thing I know, it was 2 o'clock in the morning, and I was four or five episodes into it, and I was hooked, you know?
Yeah, that's how I was with the first season of Daredevil.
There you go. And that should speak to the showrunners that they're doing the right thing, I guess.
We're going to move on to the TV talk, but first off, I want to remind you folks about our affiliate, Amazon. We do have an affiliate link available in our show notes at geekvilleradio.com. It's Amazon as you know it. Same great Amazon prices, same great Amazon services. It just lets them know that we sent you, and we do get a little bit of kickback from what you get. Really, all we're asking is if you're going to go to Amazon anyway, just use our link, a1-wrestling.com/Amazon. And once again, you can see that link in the show notes. Just use our link. You can bookmark it in the future, and there's no commitments, no surprises. You don't have to buy anything in particular. And there's no extra cost to you. That's a1-wrestling.com/Amazon. Now, I think we'll stick with the Marvel theme here when we talk fall TV. We're as of this recording, three episodes into the fourth season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Now, admittedly, I haven't seen the third episode. I've seen the first two. But the big thing is, of course, Ghost Rider is the main reveal and the main introduction of this season. We'll get to Ghost Rider in a second, but the main thing that I noticed right off the bat, the opening moments, is they really smacked you in the face with TV-14.
Not as kiddie as it was the last three seasons, that's for sure.
Right. Not only do you see the blood splattering from Ghost Rider smashing a guy's skull, but I mean, literally 3 seconds into the episode, you know, well, There's Daisy's ass, you know.
Right. That's right. Sex appeal and violence. So those are the things that will make you go from TV PG to TV 14 pretty quick.
Yeah, and I think we talked about it before in a previous episode, whether this was something the producers wanted to do or whether it's something ABC put the lean on them because they saw the success of the Netflix episodes, which had a very dark, hard edge.
I think one begat the other. I really do. I think... on that note, I thought more about that after we had that discussion a few episodes back. I think that society as a whole is a little darker and grittier. We're in a very intriguing time, so to speak, right now in the world. But I also think comics, if you follow the history, have gotten darker and grittier across the board, even the more kid-friendly ones. So yeah. It just kind of, you know, it is what it is.
Now, the big question that I have is, since you know much more about Ghost Rider than I do, were you happy with this depiction of Ghost Rider?
Giddy as a schoolgirl. Does that answer your question?
Absolutely. I mean, now this is the Robbie Reyes Ghost Rider, of course, but he does seem to look more like the Danny Ketch, Johnny Blaze skull because the Robbie Reyes look, it's more like it's a helmet that covers his face that happens to look like a skull. At least that's the way I always looked at it.
Whereas, yeah, but it has have a more demonic look to it, and I think the CGI guys do give it that. It's not just a straight up skull like you saw in the Nick Cage movies. You know, there is some angularity to the skull that's not in a normal human skull. For what it's worth,
it seemed like it's an amalgam of the Robbie Reyes character and the Johnny Blaze look.
But the costume, the outfit, the black leather jacket with the white stripes on the front. That's straight out. And the jeans, that's straight out what he wears in the comics. So the costuming is dead on. Whereas, you know, Johnny always tended to have, he always tended to wear what looked like a black jumpsuit because it was, you know, it was basically a demonic version of the costume he wore when he did his stunt show because he was a stunt cyclist before he, you know, sold his soul.
I always kind of looked to Johnny Blaze as like the dark superhero version of
Evel Knievel.
Evel Knievel, yes, exactly.
That, well, that's part of the reason that comic book worked, because it came out at the height of Evel Knievel mania. So, and then the Danny Ketch who came out in the 90s, he was, you know, leather jacket with spikes on it and jeans and boots. So this one's a little bit more similar to Danny, I think, than it is to Johnny as far as costuming goes.
Yeah, Danny Ketch seemed to be more like the straight-up biker.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, of course, there was delineations between their bikes, too. Johnny had, Johnny had choppers and Harley-looking road bikes, whereas Danny had a more bullet bike, sleeker racing bike type look to his bike.
So Danny had the crotch rocket.
Right, because that was what was in vogue in the 90s, you know? So you have to, when you think about the history of the Ghost Rider character, there's, those three separate eras, not only in character, but in when those particular comics debuted, and they were a reflection of what was popular in that culture at the time. So, which is why I think the muscle car is why they went that route with the third Ghost Rider. And, there is a definite, part of the Latino community that is very entrenched in the muscle cars and lowriders and things like that. And they kind of bring that out in the comics. They've brought it out so far in the show with the street artist doing the tribute to Ghost Rider, about the man with the flaming skull and all that. So that's nice. Once again, I'm not a PC guy, but if you're going to go diversity, let it make sense and let it be part of the story. And they're doing that way. They're not forcing it down my throat. It's like that right. Makes sense in those communities in East LA that are heavily, Hispanic and Latin, and have been for years, quite frankly, going back to, the 40s and 30s and 40s, they've been that way, that you're going to see that kind of street art. And that is kind of the vibe. And it is still a lot of, businesses that are completely and utterly family owned and have been for two or three generations of Latin Americans. So that is what Robbie Reyes represents. And they think they've done a good job so far with that. Are you got any opinions on that?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I work in a city, and a lot of Mexican restaurants around, a lot of repair places, and when you call them up, you might get a greeting in Spanish before you get a greeting in English.
Right. We've had a major influx here in Greenville, where I live, in the last 10, 15 years, and they've pretty much located in one part of the city, and they have really, that part of Greenville was dying, and they have revitalized it. And I know some, I don't want to say racist, but people that are not big on change are a little against it. But for the most part, most are like, well, you're just mad because they've revitalized an area you couldn't revitalize. So I'm all for it,
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think that we were both right on where they were going to go with this. He's an empowered individual. So there is a definite blip on the radar of S.H.I.E.L.D.
And it seems like they're not going with the Inhuman route.
No. I mean, that seems to be a major story plot, as a matter of fact. No one seems to believe him when he keeps telling them, no, I'm not an Inhuman. They didn't say mutant. I sold my soul to a demon. And they're like, yeah, right. But we all know that's really how he got his powers. So, yeah. Well, that is intriguing me, is how that storyline or that story arc is going to play out the rest of the season. Are we going to actually see the demonic, and I bring it up yet again, I've said it many, many times, we're 3 weeks away from Doctor Strange. Once they open that door, that would be about the time you'd want to do it on the show, about episode five or six. So maybe that's what's going to happen. Not that I think Benedict Cumberbatch is going to have a cameo on the, he might second half of the season. You never know. But right now, no. Benedict's too busy with Sherlock and Doctor Strange right now. So, no.
Yeah, if he was going to appear in the first half of the season, you would have heard about it by now, I think.
Yeah, that they couldn't have kept that leak under wraps. No. No.
Because he would have spotted on site.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, how long did it take for, when they were filming Suicide Squad, for those pictures to leak of Ben Affleck in the Batman costume? About 5 minutes? Mm-hmm. And Benedict Cumberbatch is in that same level of Ben Affleck. So, yeah. Yeah, no. What are your thoughts on the other major aspect of the show with the new director and how they're going about that and all the turmoil amongst the team?
I know that the character that they're using, what's the name? Jeffrey
Mace or Mays, maybe Mays.
Yeah, I believe it is Mace.
Okay.
Like Mace Windu.
Okay.
And for what it's worth, going back to the company that preceded Marvel, what would that have been?
Timely Comics. Yeah, he actually was Captain America for a while, mm-hmm. in the comics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't think that's going to happen in the series, but Jeffrey Mace in the comics was fully human. He wasn't a metahuman, and of course, it's very clear that he's either an inhuman or an enhanced human of some sort. I think he refers to himself as inhuman.
Well, I even threw out the idea there that maybe he's an LMD. We did say, or at least the one we saw use superhuman strength in episode 2.
Right, when he takes down me.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, maybe that is an LMD, and the real Jeffrey Mace is not. I think we know for a fact that the John Hanna character that they brought in at the end of last season, and the robot he has at his residence, that is an LMD. We know that, and they did say in at Comic-Con, LMDs are coming in this season. That's right, correct?
Right. Yeah. And that was another smack in the face with TV-14 was a
yeah her first appearance. Her reveal. Which is, you know, she's not harsh on the eye, so I'm not complaining. Are you complaining?
No, not at all.
I didn't think so. I just had to double check, though, you know. And I'm sorry. I don't think I've ever seen John Hanna in anything I didn't like him in. He's just a fun actor.
And I thought it was funny that they bring the two Scotsmen together to, to kind of pal them up.
Right. And I liked the story arc we had last season with Mac and how they developed his character, and they're continuing down that with this one. He's almost become the moral compass, I think, for the team, you know?
Yeah, Mac is one of my favorite characters in the show.
And I love how Fitz described him in episode 2 when he was calling, oh, I'm just a mechanic. No, you're an engineer and a small tank. That's a pretty accurate description of Mac, you know? I mean, you have to think about Mac. Here's a guy who's not super empowered, doesn't have the I mean, he has training, he's a SHIELD agent, but we're not talking like Bruce Wayne levels of hand-to-hand combat training. Yet, with just an axe and his brute power and training, he was able to at least fight to a standstill, made some major inhumans. So he's not bad to have your back in a fight, I guess is what I'm saying.
Right.
And we know Coulson's a badass. And, you know, we've got to see that this season, too. And anytime I get to see Coulson kick ass, I'm all for it, because he's just a great character. He's just so much fun.
Yeah, wholeheartedly agreed. Any other Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. thoughts before we move on?
Nope. I think this is like the other seasons. Only other thought I had would be that it's a little slow. I have some people who are diehard fans who are kind of bailing out on this one. I don't know about Ghost Rider and blah blah blah. And I'm like, give it a chance. Every season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., we all three of the previous start out slow and they totally had us hooked by the end. So give it a chance if you're on that, you know, side of the fence, folks. That would be the only comment I would make, and I think you probably would too.
Yeah, agreed. Now, I think I'm going to group the next two, I think I'm going to group the next several shows we talk about into two categories.
Mm-hmm.
The first one being the ones that I'm hooked on, that I just cannot wait to see the next episodes,
mm-hmm.
and the other ones being Jury's Still Out.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that I'm hooked on, and it really shouldn't be any surprise, I certainly don't think it's going to be for you, is the CW superhero shows.
We'll go through them in order, the way they
kind of debuted. Flash, Arrow, Supergirl, and Legends of Tomorrow.
Okay.
So we'll start with Flash. They're doing the Flashpoint storyline. Barry altered the timeline effectively twice.
Mm-hmm.
And now in the current timeline, Cisco's brother is dead.
Yeah, Dante.
So what are you thinking about Flash so far?
I like it. I mean, it's I don't like it any more than I did before, but I'm not disappointed either. I like seeing Jay Garrick. I like John Wesley Shipp, and I love that old school golden era, you know, Jay Garrick Flash costume. And
do a great job with that,
right? And getting to see him in that costume, that one episode we've seen so far was great, and it was cute. What year are we in? 1998. Well, of course you are, because Dawson's Creek is on the television. Isn't that a cute little in joke for the CW folks? And the fact that he is a speedster as well, who's more experienced than Barry, who's been keeping an eye on Barry. He even tells Barry this: "I'm keeping an eye on you," and Barry didn't know it. You know, that was kind of neat. And if you know the comic history of, you know, Justice Society versus Justice League, and we'll get to Justice Society in a little bit. That was always the link, was Jay Garrick and Barry Allen. That iconic cover of the two of them running side by side in their very, you know, iconic outfits. So I like that. That's a nice little wink wink to us comic book geeks, you know? And I'm not 100% sold on Cisco being maudlin, which is the character arc they've gone with since his brother's dead. But he seems to be coming out of that. So I want the happy jokester punny, you know, geek hero that Sisko has been. I think we all do. I think we all love that character.
Yeah. And that's when he's at his best.
Right. I think that's when he's at his best. And I'm excited because the previews for this upcoming episode, we're going to get to see Harrison Wells again and Jesse Quick. We know from the ad, she's now a speedster, which we all knew was going to happen. So they're heading the right way, you know, and, I never mind seeing Iris because she also is not harsh on the eyes. And, Jesse L. Martin, I think I've said many times on the show how big a fan I am of him. I'll watch anything he does. He's a great actor. He's Joe's just great. Joe's a great character, and Jesse L. plays him great. So I'm very, very happy.
I remember the episode from last season when they were in Earth 2, Joe West was a singer.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a little surprised at that. Then I found out, wow, Jesse L. Martin actually has quite the stage career.
Oh, yeah. He's that triple threat. He's a song and dance man. He can tell a joke, sing a song, and dance. You know, the old Rat Pack thing, right?
Yeah.
But I would be remiss if I didn't mention, for those like myself who don't have the one drawback to the Flash show and comic is the parallel dimension, multiverse, time travel stuff. It gets a little, you know, crazy in our heads. The description that John Wesley Shipp as Jay Garrick gives Barry Allen in the coffee shop, where he breaks the coffee mug and shows him how you can put it back together, but there's still little chips missing. I thought that was perfect. It was so simple and visual that even the simplest of minds, like my own, could get around that. I have used a similar analogy with a mirror breaking in teaching that I have done in the past. And so that analogy just, and that visual just totally clicked with me. I thought that was great. You can shatter the timeline and then go back and try to fix it, Barry, and put it back together as he puts this broken mug out here. But you can see there's still little chips missing. You're never going to get it exactly the way it was. And that's what the world we are in now, since he's, like you said, effectively changed the timeline twice now.
So. And was going to change it a third time until it was stopped.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the only issue I've had, and it's just a minor issue, when we did finally get that tension relieving moment where Sisko and Barry talk about what has happened, because he tells him, okay, I changed timeline and your brother was alive before I changed timeline, but I'm sorry. Sisko, though he does come to forgive Barry on the surface, Barry's comeback should have been, and I don't know if Barry could do that because it's just not in his nature, but it would have been my comeback. And you're asking me to go back and fix something. For God's sakes, I had to let the Reverse Flash go back and kill my mother. Think about that.
Yeah.
You're not
the
only one who, because of my mistakes, is having to deal with the death of a close family member.
Yeah. I was expecting him to say something to the effect of, you know, I can't go back and just make this right for you because, believe me, I know now the effects of messing with the timeline.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we've discussed it a billion times here. You know, go back and save Buddy Holly. Well, that sounds great. That sounds great on the surface. Would music be what it is today if we did that? Probably
right,
not.
Right.
But we'd still have great Buddy Holly records to listen to, original material, 1980s or so. But yeah. The way I always look at it is to go back to the Ghost Rider thing. You know, in the analogy of a paradox is you can't go back and fix things, because if you do, you're going to have that, and I just completely lost my train of thought where I was going with this. So you just have to edit this out.
Move on to Arrow then?
Well, something happened. I heard something upstairs, and I lost my train of thought. If I remember it, I'll come back to it, and you can edit it back in.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, so we'll edit that out. We'll move on to Arrow.
Now, from Flash to Arrow, now there's two things that I've really hooked with on Arrow so far. One is, and now I'm blanking on the actor's name, but the actor playing Tobias Church.
Oh, Chad L. Coleman.
Yeah, because he was on Walking Dead, right?
Yes, you're the only one on Examining the Dead who doesn't watch Walking Dead. We're reminded yet again. And for just another little trivia note, those of you who are video gamers that listen to our sister podcast, Examining the Dead, you'll remember the horror-themed Left 4 Dead franchise, the zombie first-person shooter video game. He was the voice of the coach from Left 4 Dead 2, which is one of the more enjoyable characters in that franchise. But I digress. Go ahead. So it isn't. He does zombie well stuff now. Let's see how he does with superhero stuff. So
I think he does a great job playing that character.
Oh, yeah.
It goes back to, and I'm going to make another wrestling analogy, so I'm sorry for our fans that are not wrestling fans. But, when wrestling and entertainment is done well, when they try to keep it simple,
Mm-hmm.
You know, as soon as a guy steps out of the curtain to go to the ring, you should know whether he's a good guy or a bad guy.
Right.
You know, it's a similar thing that they did with Tobias Church. As soon as he stepped out, you're like, this is a bad guy.
I'm supposed to boo him. That was your first thought, wasn't it?
Right, right. As soon as he steps out, you just want to reach into the screen and smack his face.
You're going back to my old analogy I stole from Kevin Sullivan, the Rick Martel versus Mad Dog Vachon analogy, right? Yeah. The names alone should tell you who you're supposed to cheer for and who you're supposed to boo. Yeah. And it would, you know, as a guy who doesn't watch The Walking Dead, to give you an insight with that being your first reaction into how talented an actor Chad L. Coleman is. He was one of the most lovable and adored by the fans of the Walking Dead franchise because he played the exact opposite. He was the ultimate good guy. He was the moral compass of Rick's group for a while, to the point that he's the biggest and most physically imposing of the group, and he has no problems killing zombies because, you know, they're zombies. But there's a critical scene in season 5 where he cannot pull the trigger and kill a regular living human that is threatening the group and threatening a baby, the baby, you know, Rick's child, baby child. And he can't even do what he has to do to protect that child. So you take a character like that and is accepted by that rabid fan base as an actor portraying that, and now you've got him doing this, and he's got a guy who's totally into this show like you buying him as an evil villain. That's acting chops, dude. That's acting chops.
Absolutely.
So
yeah. Kind of like how, and this is going to be our weekly mandatory Doctor Who reference.
Obligatory Doctor Who reference.
Kind of like how John Barrowman was a babyface in Doctor Who. He was a good guy, whereas in Arrow, you know, I mean, he has his moments where he will fight for the greater good if it suits his purposes, but he's a villain in the end.
Yes. Shout out to one of our listeners, Godslayer66, and one of my video gaming buddies. He pointed that out to me earlier this week when we were playing video games together. He's a Whovian as well. He's like, you ever noticed the dude that plays, he also watches Arrow. So he's like, you know the dude who plays the bad guy at Arrow? He's not a comic book fan. He just watches the show. I said, you mean Merlin? You know, he was such a good guy on Doctor Who, and he's such a jerk in this show. So shout out, Godslayer. I'm glad you're backing us up on what we talk about here.
But the other thing I wanted to bring up is Prometheus. And while Tobias Church is an original character created for the show, Prometheus is, of course, not. He is a character in the comics, more of a JLA villain than Arrow. But I just think it's cool that they're bringing another lesser-known character. I don't know if lesser-known is the right way to put it, but if you were to name DC villains, Prometheus is probably not the first name you're gonna come.
No. And that's saying something for a company that prides themselves on having the best villains. And he's not even in the first 10 you'd name. So,
right. But I can see why they're using him, because if they're making him faithful to the comics, at least Prometheus is a character that I can best describe as if Batman was evil.
Right. And my understanding, because I'm not that familiar with Prometheus, and I'm more the DC guy, so that should tell you something, right? There you go. This is the same Prometheus from the Batman comics who, just like Bruce, saw his parents murdered as a child, but his parents were both career criminals, and the cops murdered them, and that's why he became what he is, correct? That is,
yeah. So,
it's because in the comics, he's not really an archer like they presented him here. He carries around like a billy club and guns, so that's maybe what threw me, you know?
But I think that definitely backs up the analogy that Prometheus is basically an evil Batman.
Oh, that's exactly what the creators of Prometheus have said. It was meant to be the dark Batman, where instead of having law-abiding parents who gave him a loving, functional home, and then he had to watch them be murdered in front of him, a la Bruce Wayne, he was from a dysfunctional family whose parents were evil lawbreakers instead of, you know, law-abiding citizens, and he had to watch them get killed, probably rightfully so, in a shootout by cops. And it sent him down his path to hate law enforcement. And I mean, in many ways, Prometheus, the way I've always taken the character and what little I have read about him in the comics and seen in the comics is he's maybe other than Anarchy, which as the name would denote as a bad guy, who of course is already in this world, Lonnie Macon, is probably the most chaotic of all the DC villains. I mean, just truly wants to bring about a destruction of law and order. And then of course the Joker, but the Joker's in his own little unique, wonderful place. So
you could be chaotic evil.
Right. But Anarchy and then of course Prometheus are kind of the same thing. They just want to cause chaos. You know, Prometheus's chaos is more geared towards, you know, that revenge on law enforcement. But I mean, you break down law enforcement, that's kind of the textbook definition of anarchy, isn't it? You're taking away the government regulation and rule. So, you know, and they got him as a total badass, by the way, I might add. What little we've seen of him so far, don't you agree?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's only been, the two episodes put together, he's probably only been on for about 30 seconds, and you're already scared of him.
Yeah, but it's a pretty significant 30 seconds, you know. Mm-hmm. It's memorable to say the least. Well, since we're talking about new characters with Arrow, what about the new hero that we first thought was a villain, Ragman? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm not sure if he is a DC character. I mean, you'd probably know more than I would.
He is.
Okay. Because when I first saw him, when he was talking to, I forget the woman that he was trying to kill.
Mm-hmm. The head of Ameritech. Yeah. Oh, I can't think of her name. But Ameritech, yeah. for those who don't know, is one of those big companies that DC Universe cross. And they make Ameritech, I think is how you actually pronounce it. They make everything from tires to military.
Yeah, Ameritech was a phone company.
Right, Ameritech. And the biggest tie into the comic books is John Henry Irons, who would later become the superhero Steel during the Death of Batman or Death of Superman storyline. He works at Ameritech.
Okay.
But Ameritech is also, I mean, they're right up there with like LexCorp and Wayne Enterprises and that type, you know, Cord Industries in the DC Universe as major players, Star Labs. It, you know, they sell weapons to the government. They're a multifaceted technologies based company. So there you go.
Getting back to Ragman, when he was talking to that woman that he was trying to kill, I actually got a Scarecrow vibe from him, the way his mask and his clothes looked.
Well, I don't want to go off the rails too much. I know I'm the crazy train. That's my job. But Ragman in the comic books, once again, we were talking, you know, diversity with the Latino Ghost Rider and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Ragman, when he originally came out in the comics, was a big deal because he is actually a Jewish superhero. And the Ragman character itself, which is much more mystically based, he's a member of JLA, or, you know, of Justice League Dark in the comics. And I don't know if they're going to go that route because they said they weren't going to go with mystic stuff after Damian Dark. But, I mean, it is the character in the comic book's storyline. Ragman, the look of him, is actually based upon a real-life Hebrew folklore fairy tale that ties into the Gollum fairy tale and folklore. So the character underneath it, the Rags, actually is Jewish. And that when that character debuted, that was an attempt at DC to diversify their heroes. You know, I mean, contrary to popular belief, women and blacks are not the only minorities that are underserved in the comics, even though they are. Latinos, Jews, gays. And I mean, think about it. We've got a gay black man who's married now on the show. We now have a Jewish superhero. We have a white woman who is a genius and runs her own, you know, multi-billion dollar corporation in Felicity. There's a lot of diversity on the show on Arrow, but they're not shoving it down our throats.
Right, right, exactly. Everybody knows it, and they just accept it as normal.
Mm-hmm. That is how you do PC. And I'll get off my soapbox now. But yeah, I'm interested to see how they go with it. I wonder if they're going to bring the mystical side up. I didn't know if you knew that about the character.
No, I didn't.
I also like the fact that they tied, once again, because they do this so well in this universe, they did tie in his character to an event that was kind of glossed over last season when Felicity diverted that one missile, remember? Mm-hmm. So there you go.
All right, moving on from Arrow to Supergirl. There's two things that I want to address with Supergirl.
Okay.
And I think we're going to agree on both of them. One is that Tyler Hoechlin absolutely knocked it out of the park.
He is as close as I've seen to Christopher Reeve since Christopher Reeve played Superman.
That is exactly what I was going to say. That, and this is the Superman that we should be getting in the current movie universe.
Exactly. Nothing against Henry Cavill.
I think Cavill has it in him. I've been saying, I think Cavill has at least one genuinely good movie in him. It just takes the right director.
What sold me on him, on Tyler Hoechlin, even though I've had some female fans say, he's not as hot as Henry Cavill. I said, yeah, but he ain't bad looking. And they would go, well, no, he's not bad looking. is that when you deal with Superman, he's just like when we talk about Batman, I always talk about, well, this actor played Batman well, but didn't play Bruce Wayne well. This one played Bruce Wayne well, but not Batman well. The same can be said for the Superman character. You've got to find an actor who can play the Clark Kent side as well as he can play the Superman, you know, Kal-El's last son of Krypton side. He nails the Clark Kent side. Just nails it. I think you would be in agreement with that.
Yeah. As soon as we saw him on the phone talking to Perry White.
Mm-hmm. that's what made Christopher Reeve's portrayal so good. Is he wasn't that he was great as Superman, because he was great as Superman. He was awesome as Clark Kent. That's right. So.
And that really was something, to an extent, Brandon Routh did as well. Although I don't think he was as good of a Superman as Christopher Reeve and Tyler Hoechlin is. But
no,
I thought Brandon Routh was a good Clark Kent.
Sure. And that I think is the weakness of Henry Cavill. He's not a very good Clark Kent. Clark Kent would not be brooding and argue with Perry White like he did in Batman vs. Superman. That's not Clark Kent. He'd be more like, yes, boss, whatever you say.
Yeah.
Yes, Mr. White. Yeah.
But I just remember in Superman Returns when Lois and somebody else, I don't think it was Lois, it was two people at the Daily Planet, and they were saying, hey, wait a minute, once Clark comes back, Superman comes back, you don't think, and Brandon Routh comes stumbling in through the door like dropping papers or something.
Oh, exactly. That's Clark Kent. And on the whole Perry White thing we're talking about, there is a certain Midwestern blue collar raised by a farmer mentality that Clark Kent has. He would be yes sir, no sir, yes ma'am, no ma'am.
And it's integral to his character.
Exactly. I mean, for God's sakes, we know the man was raised by Luke Duke, and we know Luke was raised that way by Uncle Jesse, so come on. Right? I jest, but I mean, the analogy is, it was there. I had to do it, man.
So we agree on Tyler Hoechlin. The other thing is, as soon as I heard the name John Corbin, I knew we were getting Metallo.
Oh, that was awesome, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. What did you think of the, I mean, it was very subtle. It looked the same. We know that they moved the shooting to Vancouver, but obviously the set that they had in LA for the DEO, they don't have in Vancouver. So they just went with that other route. What did you think of how they handled that for that big building now and complex that they're in?
If I didn't know that they changed locations, I would have been like, what? Yeah. But
in the back of your mind, you kind of like, ah, right.
Yeah. Yeah, the explanation was fine, and it's not the first time that a sci-fi show has had to change their environment. You know, even going so far back as Buck Rogers, when they went from a land base to a space base.
Right, and I did like, they said that they were going to show us right away what was in the pod, and they did, and that's still there. We don't know. I mean, I thought they handled that well. It was the first 5 minutes of the first episode. And we know it's there, it's established, it's in the background, but will be for, you know, to be decided. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
They did a lot of good smoke and mirrors to forbid us forget about that, to move forward with what this is a long season. It's 20-something episodes. You can't focus just on that one thing or you'd be done by episode 6, wouldn't you?
Right. I think that Kryptonian is going to be brought around
towards the end of the series, whether it's Superboy or whether it's
Zod or something like that.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if it's Zod.
One thing I noticed, what was your thoughts on how they handled bringing a Luthor into this world?
Yeah, they brought him in by name and they have his sister, and we're still not sure if the sister is a good guy or a bad guy.
But also not harsh on the eyes, the actress, which is always good.
Right.
And do you think Lex's sister would be ugly? No.
Right.
That also brings me up, no mention I wasn't really paying attention to the opening credits or sightings of Max Lord yet. We know he's still under custody. You know, even though he helped out at the end, DEO made it explicit. You're still, you know, you're not free. You're still a prisoner. Do we see him come back? Has that been spoken about? Did the actor move on?
I don't know. I don't know of anything for certain, but he's one of those guys like Cat Grant. He may not be integral to the show, but the show is missing something if he doesn't pop in every now and then.
Right. And I did not pay attention to the opening credits to see. I can't remember the actor's name, but I would recognize it if I saw it. You know, I'll be a little more diligent in watching the opening credits, you know, Monday night when it shows on again to see if he's in there. I think he's got to come back. I think he played a great foil because he's one of those bad guys, once again, DC, who's so proud of their villains, that is like a Ra's al Ghul, like a Lex Luthor. As evil and as crazy as they are, there is some logic and truth to what they do and what they say, which makes them especially scary. Because
the best villain.
Yeah, because at some point you, as a guy who's totally rooting for the heroes, goes, they kind of got a point. They make you step back and think. And you know, it's never their intentions. It's their ways of bringing it about that is where they screw the pooch. I mean, Ra's is right. The world's dying and we as humans are destroying the earth. not so sure killing 90% of the people on Earth is the way to solve that. But that's what Raish wants to do. So, you know, Luther's the same thing. He's so hell-bent on destroying Superman because he's right. How do we know we can trust Superman? He is an alien. He's not one of us. And we worship him like he's a god. And what happens if he does go crazy? We don't have any way to stop him. He makes a valid point.
Right. If Superman just one day wakes up and says, screw this.
Right. I mean, all we can sit here and talk about, well, that ain't how Jonathan and Martha Clark raised him. Doesn't matter. He's not really their son. He's the last son of Krypton. We don't know. We don't. And that's something I wanted to bring up about the entire Superman mythos. And I've wanted to mention it many times, and I haven't. This is apropos any time to bring it up. All we know about Krypton is what we hear from the holograms that were given to Superman and what Kara remembers as a young child. And it's almost presented to us as this utopian-like society that was highly more advanced than we are here on this Earth. Are we so sure is that what Krypton was?
Or is that how they wanted it to be remembered?
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, because remember, this is also the same civilization that brought us Brainiac. So that makes me go, And this is the same society that gave us General Zod and Non. You know, so think about that, folks. I know you're not a Harry Potter fan, but that's something J.K. Rowling has said about Harry Potter is, when you go back and look at all the books as a whole, as an adult reader, not a child reader, but an adult reader like myself, realize that I wrote this in third person, but really from the point of view of Harry. So you're seeing this from the point of view of a young boy, not from a uninterested third-party adult. And it might change your perception of some of the characters and events when you realize that. And I did that, and she was right. And I think the same thing can often be said for the entire Supergirl, Superman mythos. Just something to think about.
You just triggered a memory about Flash. We'll flash back to Flash for a second. But Harry Potter, of course, we have Draco Malfoy,
I forget
the actor's name, as kind of a foil to Barry in the forensics department. So I'm just kind of curious what you thought of that character.
Tom Felton is the actor's name, by the way.
Okay, yes,
thought he did a great job. He's an intriguing character. And the best way I can sum it up is how another friend of mine, who is also an adult and a Harry Potter fan like me, who watches The Flash. So what'd you think? Well, he's still a jerk.
Yeah, that's the way I was going to put it. You know, with his character, you're not quite sure, is he a good guy or a bad guy, or is he just a jerk?
And that's kind of where Draco winds up being in Harry Potter. He goes from being a foil and bad guy to a reluctant hero that's probably still a bit of a jerk, okay, for those of you that aren't Harry Potter fans. So basically, I think they cast Tom Felton because that is Draco Malfoy as an adult. This character is. So, there you go.
So to round out our DCCW talk, we did have the premiere of Legends of Tomorrow last week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got Oliver Queen out of the gate, you know, to kind of set up the explanation. The first episode was basically a flashback. And we got Neil McDonald back as Damian Dark, so it looks like he's going to be one of the villains. And also we got Eobard Thawne.
Which was awesome, which was absolutely awesome reveal at the end, I thought, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. That and the last shot with the Justice Society descending on the Legends I thought was amazing.
Yeah, that was great. And you can already see the major story arc this season is going to be Rory and this new character they introduced that had figured out that Ollie was the Green Arrow and was, you know, he's basically, for all intents and purposes, he's the new Rip. He's going to be the brains of the team, I think, you know?
Yeah, until they find I think the part of the plot of the show is going to be, the quest for Rip.
Exactly. I think that's what I was going to say. That is the new storyline. We can see that now. Now they've got the team back together because, you know, they went back and got everybody, and the team's back together. They're still leaderless. So that's going to be the main story arc, which it also would probably lend to bringing Jonah Hex back, which we know is going to happen. I mean, they've said that there's been leaked photos of that actor on set in the Jonah Hex makeup. So there's obviously another Jonah Hex episode or two this episode. We said last season when we reviewed that episode that, there was a history between him and Rip that was alluded to and probably going to be, you know, expanded further. I think that's probably where some of this is going. Just my opinion. Mm-hmm. And then there's all the side plots, like can Sarah get past her blood vengeance to try to get to Damian Dark to, you know, get revenge for the death of Laurel.
This is the second show in this season of CW shows that are going to deal with the potential altering of a timeline.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming she's not going to kill Dark.
No, I don't think so.
It'll be interesting if they try to explain that. You know, you kill him now. What changes do you have for the future?
Right, Right. Does Laurel, then maybe Laurel doesn't die. And if Laurel doesn't die, does the team not get back together? You know, does the team not break up at the end of the last season of Arrow? There's a lot of things that could happen. Does, you know, but the one character we have not discussed in any of these shows that we have been told is going to be integral to all the shows is John Barrowman, Merlin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's going to be, according to the San Diego Comic-Con reveal, he is going to be the head of the Legion of Doom.
Mm-hmm. And we can see the Legion of Doom, like we said, already forming with Damian Dark and the Reverse Flash. We know Grodd's coming back. He's in some of the advertising before the season started. Don't know if he'll be in the Legion of Doom, but it's possible, you know. So what are your thoughts on not seeing Barrowman in any of these shows yet?
Yeah, he hasn't shown up at all yet.
Yeah. So once again, not paying attention to the credits as I should be. I haven't seen him in any of the credits on any of the shows either.
No, and I don't think he's credited as a regular or anything. I know that his contract, he's essentially going to appear in all four shows.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, wow, I just had a thought. Just like we're talking about, it could be Zod or it could be Superboy. If they're going the Legion of Doom route, why can't the guy in the pod be Brainiac?
Good point.
Just a thought, folks. Something more of those things. We've given you a lot to think about just talking about DC TV shows, haven't we?
Mind blown.
Mind blown, folks. I would be remiss if I didn't add this too before we move on to other topics. One thing I've loved about this entire Flero, Berlanti, Guggenheim verse, we all as fans have said, you know, we want you to stay a little closer to the source material and quit being so CW with these romances. Well, isn't it amazing in the first few episodes of all these shows, there is no more Alicity, and they're not letting they're getting back together, which right. was never in the comic books to begin with. And there's no more Jimmy Olsen and Kara, which was never in the comic books either. Mm-hmm. But Iris and Barry do seem to be getting together, which is straight out of the comic books. Just another thing to think about, folks. I am pleased with that. I love Felicity, and I would also be remiss if I didn't add this. When they revealed, you know, this new boyfriend that she's obviously hiding from the rest of the team, that is, we know now from after the second episode, is a cop, you know, with the Star City Police. That, it took me a while to figure out who he is. That's Tyler Ritter. That is John Ritter's younger son.
Okay.
His older brother, Josh, is known to those who listen to the Examining the Dead as being in several horror movies, Bride of Chucky, Freddy vs. Jason, and looks amazingly like his father. Well, next time you see him on Arrow, folks, look and you and close your eyes open quick, and you realize he looks just like his dad, too. So, funny little side note. I think I might have told this story before on the podcast or maybe on Examining the Dead. John Ritter and Robert Englund, Freddy Krueger, of course, were friends in the 70s who were both struggling, starving actors trying to get a gig. And they shared an apartment together.
I believe Mark Hamill was in the same apartment.
Yes, he was. He was. Now you talk about mind blowns for Geekville, for geek people. John Ritter, Robert Englund, and Luke Skywalker, Jack Tripper from Three's Company, and Freddy Krueger, all in the same. We're all living together, hand to mouth, in the same apartment.
Imagine those three characters having a conversation.
Oh yeah, exactly. But it was about the time that John got cast as Jack, and of course that was his breakthrough role, was Three's Company. We all know that, right? Mm-hmm. And he was about the time he was that Robert was going out with him a lot, as two young single guys about Hollywood, and that's when Robert started going to some of these early goth clubs with John. And in the background, they would have televisions that were playing old clips from old early Wes Craven movies like The Hills Have Eyes and Last House on the Left, which is what motivated Robert Englund to go and seek after the Freddy Krueger role when it came available a few years later. Also, Robert has said many times when they filmed Freddy versus Jason, he had to do a double take many days, you know, because he obviously had to be in the makeup trailer longer to put the Freddy makeup on, right? And when he would come out, they'd already prepped and started seeing, you know, he goes, I always have to do a double take because I would think it was 1975 again because he looked so much like his dad. You know, I'd come out and go, oh my God, John, you know, because this is not long after the untimely passing of John Ritter that Freddy versus Jason was made. And so I think the same can be said, though, for Tyler after that long the explanation there. You know, my horror movie fandom took over there for a second. But folks, when you watch Arrow, look, I mean, you'll see, you'll realize now that I've told you that, oh my God, it is John Ritter.
He's John Ritter with a goatee.
Yeah, he's Jack Tripper with a beard. but my girlfriend, she said, no offense, I know he's John Ritter's son, but man, Ray Palmer, Oliver Queen, Man, Felicity's kind of taking a step back. Is this? So anyway, I said, we don't know. We haven't seen the character yet. She says, I'm just saying he ain't Brandon Routh and he ain't Stephen Amell. That's all I'm saying. So for what it's worth.
To kind of make another analogy of that, looking like your dad, or in this case, your granddad.
Right.
I remember hearing the story of Hank Williams III playing the Grand Ole Opry.
Uh-huh.
And he walked through backstage, and Minnie Pearl was still with us at the time.
Uh-huh.
And for those of you who may not know country music but may know 1980s history, she did the Spick and Span commercials in the 80s.
Yeah, she was most famous for you, Hee-Haw, the lady with the big straw hat with the price tag on it. Very famous,
right.
Country comedian.
Right.
Kind of iconic in her own way, you know?
Yeah. But she knew Hank Williams Sr. And the story went that Hank Williams III came in to do the gig, and he had on the string tie and the big cowboy hat and the suit, because, you know, he was dressing for the crowd.
Right. It's Grand Ole Opry.
Minnie Pearl supposedly screamed because she thought she was seeing a ghost.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, Hank Jr., for that matter, Bosefus, his father, Hank's third father, has said, you know, you know this because you're a country music fan, but remember, just don't. It's fortuitous. The reason he wears the dark glasses and has the beard is because he had a very, very serious rock climbing accident in Montana that almost killed him. And he has a huge scar.
In 1973.
He has a huge scar on his face, and it's to cover it up. And he said, actually, that was a fortuitous accident now that he survived, because the dark glasses and the beard prevented that exact thing from happening to him that did happen to his son. So, you know, I think we are all at the age here on the panel here on Geekville, and a lot of our listeners are at that age where we're going to start to see that. We're going to start to see the children of the stars that we grew up on now getting roles. So it happens. I mean, it's like we already see this in the Arrowverse with Robbie Amell when he was on there. When you saw Firestar, when you saw Robbie next to Oliver, you realized they were cousins. It was pretty obvious they were from the same genetic stock, you know?
Yeah.
It was kind of glaring. So, you know. But by the same token, I can't remember the actress' name that plays Iris. She looks like she could be Jesse L. Martin's real-life daughter, doesn't she?
Candace Patton, yeah. Yeah, they definitely look like they're related.
Yeah, that's good, and you know, it is what it is. But I think we've talked long enough about the other things. We got off on country music and horror. We're sorry, folks. That's other loves in our lives.
Yeah, my apologies for anybody that got turned off by that. But
come on back. We're getting back on comic book and geek stuff, folks. We promise.
I do want to remind you folks about Audible. You can get a lot of comic book and geeky stuff on Audible, audiblepodcast.com/A1. There are Walking Dead titles. There are superhero titles. There's
Star Wars, Star Trek.
Full cast audio dramas. You can get the Star Wars radio play from NPR that aired in the 80s. Yeah, that's a high recommendation, and you can actually get that for free because you get one title for free with a 30-day risk-free trial. I mean, you actually get Mark Hamill as Luke Skywalker. You actually get Anthony Daniels as C-3PO. To give you an idea, the Star Wars movie is, what, about 2 hours, 5 minutes long, I want to say?
About right there.
Approximately. The Star Wars radio play is 6.5 hours.
Wow.
So, and you get a whole bunch more stuff put in, a whole lot more background. And you can get that 6.5 hour radio drama for free by signing up for a risk-free 30-day trial at audiblepodcast.com/A1.
Now, you do Audible spots every week, and I've never asked you, and this is an appropriate time as any to ask you, while our listeners are listening in, with there being all the Doctor Who available on Audible, I'm assuming there's Monty Python stuff on Audible as well.
I haven't looked, but I'd be surprised if there isn't.
Okay.
I mean, 150,000 titles.
I don't know if Monty Python qualifies as Geekville worthy, but I think it kind of does.
In my book, it does.
I think it does, too, because, you know, it's just a flesh wound.
Yeah.
But anyway. I
mean, who doesn't know the whole Black Knight bit?
And the knights who go knee. I'm sorry, for my money, that bunny rabbit is the best villain / monster bad guy ever in any movie, period. I'm never going to change that opinion. That thing comes flying across the screen, goes right after the dude's throat, and it's this cute little bunny. That is the greatest thing I think I've ever seen filmed before. But anyway, I digress.
Yeah, there actually is a Monty Python's Flying Circus.
Circus.
Very best of the BBC TV series, and I'm assuming it's just the audio of it.
Well, you know, our listeners are used to my stream of conscious, so I'll continue with that. That's something we've never done here on Geekville. We might need to do for a future episode. Folks, you need to let us know if you'd like to do it. Maybe we need to go back and do a, like you did with Star Trek, do one with some Monty Python stuff. Just a thought.
Absolutely. I'd be down with that.
I'm pretty sure that we could find a few others that are never guests that would probably be willing to talk about that too. A certain British fellow I know probably would be down with that, I think.
I think so too.
Okay.
Now, when we kicked off our TV discussion with the stuff that had me hooked, these other two titles, the jury is still out on. And I've only seen the premiere episode of each, and that's Timeless and Conviction.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if you've seen either of these.
No, but those are both ABC properties, correct?
Well, a Conviction is ABC. Timeless, I believe, is NBC.
It is NBC.
They actually air opposite of each other. They air at the same time.
I keep seeing the ads for Timeless when I watch Blacklist. So it is NBC. You're right.
Okay. Yeah. And I thank God for DVR, because there's no way I'd be able to watch these two if I didn't have DVR.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But Timeless, the best way I can describe it, it met my expectations. You know, I didn't have the best of expectations, mm-hmm. but I got what the trailers teased. And to give you an idea, the first episode deals with the crashing of the Hindenburg.
Yeah, I kind of gathered that was going to come up at some point from some of the ad campaign I had seen. It looked like, oh, they're going to go back to the Hindenburg crash.
Right. But if you remember the 80s, there was a short-lived show in 1982, 83, I want to say, called Voyagers.
Ah.
Where the guy and the kid were basically time police, not to be confused with time cop.
Which was a great movie.
But it's a similar type of thing. They try to make sure, not unlike Legends of Tomorrow, they mm-hmm. try to make sure history stays accurate.
Yeah, from the ad campaign, it kind of felt to me as though it had a little bit more serious and 2016 vibe of a Quantum Leap, which is also mm-hmm. in that same. And another one we would also mention in that same vein, which I think was more of a spiritual successor to Voyagers, was Sliders on Fox in the 90s.
Yes.
So those are all, they're all, so I am right in assuming it's kind of like all three of those shows in that movie.
Yeah. Okay. It definitely, if you like those shows, you'll probably like what you see in this.
That's not an unusual trope, I think, for the geeks, that time travel, time cop thing.
Yeah. And a little bit of trivia for the geeks. The military guy in it is played by Matt Lanter, who's probably best known for being the voice of Anakin Skywalker in The Clone Wars.
Oh, okay. Excellent.
And the guy that invented the time machine is played by Matt Frewer.
Aha!
So you got Anakin Skywalker and Max Headroom mm-hmm. in a time travel series.
And when we talk about Max Headroom, we are going back in a time machine. unless you were a child of the 80s, you don't know who that is. What a strange little... Him and Jocko are the two I still can't get my head around why we were fascinated by both those individuals in the 80s, but we were. Yeah, the Hindenburg, that's kind of was cool. I remember the episode of the Waltons, since we off mic were talking about Ralph Waite and NCIS. That was my first entree into the Hindenburg, was that episode of the Waltons where John Boy as a young journalist covered that. Do you remember that episode?
I actually hadn't seen much of the Waltons.
Oh my goodness. I am shocked. The milquetoast all-American best boy you are. I figured Waltons would be right up your alley. My mother's mother was from the hills of North Carolina. The Waltons were kind of her family history. So, yeah, that's what we watched in our home.
I am familiar with the ending about how you'd see all the lights turning out. And it's like, good night, John Boy.
Right.
Yeah. And John Boy was the lead in Battle Beyond the Stars, the science fiction 1980 Star Wars ripoff that Roger Corman did.
That we talk about all the time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he does favor Mark Hamill a little bit. So there you go.
But the other show that I wanted to mention is Conviction, which is Haley Atwell's ABC crime drama. And unlike the standard crime drama, like in a CSI or an NCIS or something to that effect, as the name implies, they go back and investigate convictions as to whether they may have been wrongly convicted.
Which is kind of topical for today's time with all these DNA improvements we've made. And that actually is happening a lot now.
Mm-hmm. But it's that kind of twist on things. And Haley Atwell does do a very good American accent.
Well, I haven't seen it yet, you know, or Timeless for that matter. I've got so many other things going on. The fact you told me that it opens up with Hurt with Haley Atwell and lingerie, I'm sold. You know, not quite
opened up, but it's definitely in the first act.
Well, there you go. I mean, come on. When you told me about the lesbian love thing and Once Upon a Time, I go back to that. you know my predilections for Haley Atwell. That should have been your selling point to me from the get-go. Train, if you watch this, you get to see Haley Atwell in lingerie. You would have had me sold from the jump. There would have been no doubt in my mind. I might watch this show. This would be a definite now.
And one other geek casting choice in this is the mother of the main character is played by the actress who played Moira Queen.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I don't know if she's just making a career out of playing the mother of the superhero, but
well, for my first time seeing her, I think I said here on the podcast before was she played a love interest for Gibbs in like season 5 of NCIS. She was a CID colonel. CID is a criminal investigative division for the Army. It's basically the Army's NCIS, and she was a colonel. And a brief love interest for Gibbs' character. And so it was weird seeing her in fatigues and then there's like a rich woman in Arrow. And it sounds like in this, she's yet another take on a character. So that's once again, acting chops.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to get into the final segment of the show where we're going to talk Luke Cage. There will be spoilers. I'll wave the spoiler tag at the other side of the break. But this is the Geekville Podcast, and we will be right back.
Looking for a podcast that talks video gaming? A show that has something for both classic and current-gen gamers alike? Well, then look no further.
You Just Got Fragged.
YouJustGotFragged.com hosts the You Just Got Fragged podcast, news and commentary on the world of gaming, likes, gripes, top 10 lists, and more. That's YouJustGotFragged.com, part of the A1-Wrestling.com podcast family.
You just got fragged.
Attention all Time Lords and ladies. This message is being sent by the order of Lady President Romana and the High Council of Gallifrey. Geekville presents Examining the Doctor, a weekly commentary on Doctor Who stories, both classic and new. From Hartnell to Capaldi, Examining the Doctor keeps you both informed and entertained. That's Geekville presents Examining the Doctor, available on iTunes, Stitcher, and at A1-Wrestling.com.
Okay, we are back, the final segment of the show, and Train, you're going to kind of carry the ball on this one, because you've seen all of Luke Cage, right?
Oh, you damn right, yeah.
Yeah, so you haven't seen as much of it as I have, but I'm going to wave the spoiler tag here.
Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert! Spoiler hole has been breached. Spoiler
now, my understanding is Netflix was actually shut down for a few hours the weekend of its release,
mm-hmm.
you know, because of the demand of the show. And after seeing the first episode, I can see why, because I'm hooked on this, much like I am the Arrowverse shows. I can't wait to see what's next.
Remember when we talked in our preview a few weeks back about this, that the word was it was unapologetically black? It is. And it's yes. Awesome for it. I will leave it at that.
It is funny seeing the social feedback from the social media, because
uh-huh.
there seems to be a divide amongst the criticisms.
Mm-hmm.
One of them being about how the show was so unapologetically black, and of course we agree it has to be.
Mm-hmm.
And the other side of it, they're saying that it's too conservative. I don't know if it's social justice warriors or what, but... It might be a little controversial to say it, but there's a lot of use of the N-word in the
yes,
show.
Yes, sure there is. But it kind of is not it's not gratuitous. I think because you had a black man directing it and it stars a black character and it's about Harlem and the way it was used, it doesn't get the slam for that use like, say, a white guy directing and Quentin Tarantino directing Django Unchained, who used that word a lot too, and you know the backlash he got for that. Which I'm sorry, Samuel L. I love you as Mace Windu, and I love you as Nick Fury. I know he's your boy, and you're in all his movies, but you defending him as a white guy was a little bit offended, you know. So I can understand why my white friends were offended by that movie, and it wasn't that I didn't like the movie, but it was a problem. But anyways, I digress.
But we're not talking about the other side. Yeah, the other side of it talking about it being too conservative is they think the character of Luke Cage is too conservative. Now, my understanding is Mike Coulter made sure that with all the N-words that were dropped in it, Luke Cage himself does not use it.
No.
It's like he's above that.
No. In fact, matter of fact, There is a very pivotal scene in, I think, episode 3, because you haven't got to that yet, where he gets mugged from behind by a young, youthful black man who calls him that. And his response will tell you all about how Luke feels about that word. There's something along the lines, the last man that pointed a gun at me and called me that word, So you get, you understand. But I think Mike Coulter does an excellent job as this character. It's to the point now, I have not read a Luke Cage title yet or any Luke Cage comics yet since this has come out. But I can tell you right now, he is now in the Kevin Conroy, Robert Downey Jr. world, where when I read Luke Cage from here on out, I'm going to hear Mike Coulter's voice. That's how good he nails the role.
Yeah. And again, it goes back to the analogy we made before about Tobias Church and Jessica Jones. As soon as he came on camera, you knew this is a good guy.
I'm supposed to cheer for this guy. And they had me sold literally within the first 45 seconds of the show with what I think is the best of the premiere episode, episode 1. I think it's one of the best lines I've ever heard in any show, was the best line of this show. When Pops has the list of famous people who get free haircuts at his barbershop, and the last person on the list is the only white guy, and it's Al Pacino. And the response of Bobby's character was, you know, Godfather and Scarface has given that white man a ghetto pass for the rest of his life. That is the funniest line I've ever heard in my life. That was so funny. And it's so true is why it was so funny.
Carlito's way is probably up there, too.
It probably is. But that was an Italian guy playing an Italian guy, you know. If you're a black listener, if you're a listener to our show and you're a black or African-American, you know exactly what they mean. If you're a white listener to our show and you have spent a lot of time in the African-American community, have a lot of African-American friends, you understand that joke as well. So anyway, you really get what he means when he says that. But anyway, I was just totally sold on the show. The violence is there, just like in Daredevil and in Jessica Jones. But once again, I think it needs to be. It I don't think it's overly gratuitous. It was cool that, you know, Diamondback, who's one of the main bad guys in this, I find it intriguing that they picked him, and they did tweak their backstory significantly from the comic book. Diamondback in the comic book only lasts for 2 issues. He lasts for the first 2 issues from 1971 or 72 of Luke Cage, and he dies. And he doesn't here. So, you know, that I found a little bit interesting, but I was cool with that. The Cottonmouth character was very close to what he is in the comic books. Very well done. Mariah, the Alfred Woodard character, definitely.
Who we did see in Avengers 2, I want to say, or is it Civil War?
Uh-huh. And once again, spoilers alert, folks, and I hate to spoil this for you because you haven't seen the whole run of the show yet. You're going to understand why she did what she did at the start of Civil War 2. It is the same character. You're going to understand that Luke Cage and this show, if you're a fan of the MCU, is extremely important because the what happens in this show and how she's a crooked politician who's trying to rule Harlem with an iron fist, and Luke Cage stands in her way. She spends it like every politician to get non-empowered individuals to fight against empowered individuals. And that excuse my language here. You guys, hope you got your thumb on the button. That bullshit story she gives Tony Stark is exactly that. It's bullshit. She is not some grieving mother who was a government worker. She's manipulating Tony because she knows that she needs to take out empowered individuals, because one so said empowered individual, which would be Luke Cage, is standing in her way of her getting what she wants. And so,
and that's a testament to her acting, because yes. I did not know that watching. None of us knew that watching a Civil War. You just thought she was a grieving mother.
No. And that's great acting, and that's very, very clever writing. And amazing. We've said how they do it in the MCU, how they'll plant seeds way before it actually comes to fruition and you understand things. That was one.
Going all the way back to Powers Booth in the first Avengers movie.
And then he pops up in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and you're like, aha, aha, yes. Alfred Woodard is definitely that, her character. She doesn't even call herself Mariah when she presents herself to Tony. She calls herself, I can't remember what she calls herself. I have to go back and watch Civil War. But the character itself, who's called Black Mariah in the comic books, is very different. She's more of a madam, female crime lord. And the take they have here in Luke Cage is she's a crooked politician who is the public face for a criminal organization that her cousin Cottonmouth runs. And so they're trying to rule Harlem both through running the crime and being the elected public face of it. you know, to use the wrestling term, to babyface the media and the public, you know, outside of Harlem. So, yeah, that was well done. The Misty Knight, Mercedes Knight character is very, very much like her comic book. Very well done. Once again, the actress is quite pleasing on the eyes.
Now, she was the one that it was at the bar in the beginning.
That Luke hooks up with. Yes, that is. Yes. That is, and she is very integral to the whole Luke Cage. She and another character that you haven't seen yet because you haven't watched enough, Seth, they become basically the business end of Heroes for Hire with Danny Rand and Luke Cage. Because in the comic books, and I'll be interested to see if they go this route, Danny Rand and Mercedes wind up together. They're a couple.
Oh, okay.
So think about that, folks. That's two interracial couples. Because in the comic books, Luke Cage and Jessica Jones are married and have a child. A black man married to a white woman. And in this case, you got a white man with a black woman. So those who are saying it's not this and that and not that, and it's pretty racially diverse. You know, a lot of the social justice warriors you're talking about are bothering me because it's so obvious they've never read the source material and where, right. And they don't know where this is going. I do. So I understand I have an insight they don't. But that was my complaint, if you remember, all the way back when we reviewed Batman versus Superman and all these fans coming out of the theater complaining and these things I saw online complaining, and they were their arguments for their complaints were it isn't close to the source material. Well, no, it's not. But then their argument for why it wasn't close to the source material wasn't the source material either. Give me an argument and I will gladly listen to that logical argument, but don't give me flawed logical argument that you claim is you're gleaning from this, because you're not gleaning from that, because you obviously have not looked at that. That bothers me. And so I would say the social justice warriors, before you jump on Luke Cage, which I think is fantastic, I love it, I recommend it for anybody to watch, go back and pick you up the first five issues from 1971 of Luke Cage and read them, and then come back and tell me what you think about this. You might change your mind.
I'm going to do that because I have the Marvel Digital subscription. Mm-hmm. I have the access to their archives. Mm-hmm. So I am going to do just that.
And you will go, wow. You will go, wow. You will realize how they nailed it. And they had me sold, like I said, the first 45 seconds with the Bobby joke about Al Pacino. But episode 4, big spoiler again, folks, when they give the backstory of how Luke gets his back powers down at Seagate Prison in Georgia, and he breaks out, and it was so cleverly done. When he breaks out, he's naked because he's been in the chamber, the submersion chamber where they expose his skin to give him the tough skin. He has to find clothes, and he rips some clothes off of a clothesline, and then he puts them on and looks at himself in the reflection of a car window. Well, it's a yellow collared shirt that's blousy and pants, and then he's still got the chains and the shackles on and the headband from the science experiment that looked just like the original 70s comic, which all the fans of us are going, that's ridiculous. And the comment of Mike Coulter as Luke Cage, I look so stupid. It's just, I'm going, okay, that's it. I am so far sold in this movie. I'm totally committed now. You guys have totally got me.
So the only thing he'd be missing for the 70s look would be an afro.
Right. And he has an afro at this point. Before he shaved his head. So he's even got the afro with it. I mean, it's great. The problem is he has a beard too. He didn't shave the beard off yet. the Shades character, who I love in the comic books, by the way, he's not quite this. The actor's Theo Rossi, which to me sounds like an Italian derivation. In the comic books, Shades is actually Hispanic. And a dark Hispanic, like a Dominican or a Cuban, that looks like it's probably a mixture of Latino and African descent, you know?
Right. I'd hesitate to call him white, you know?
Right, right. But that's what he is in the comics. Here, he's not white, but he's definitely not black or Hispanic. I don't know what he is, but he's definitely ethnic, I guess. But suffice it to say, Theo Rossi does an outstanding job. He's one of the best characters in the whole run. And I think you will like that character as the show progresses. You can never quite figure out whose side he's on. And at the end of the day, you know who Shade's side's on? Shade's side. That's who Shade's side Shade's on, is Shade's side. And he's a great foil for Luke. And I think you'll like that character as it develops. Love seeing Freddie Faison as Pops. I've always loved Freddie Faison. He's a great actor. All the way back to Coming to America, which for my money is the greatest comedy ever made, but I don't want to talk about that. as the landlord in that, Teddy Murphy's character. He was great. And once again, having spent a lot of time, and I feel weird saying this because I'm a white guy and I don't want to be that white guy, but I have spent a lot of time in the African-American community because of my friends. The way he portrays and the way they portray that barbershop is so dead on. It's barbershops in general, whether you're a black man or a white man, are a unique thing to the male. And I think you would agree with me on that. That's the one place that we can kind of go where we can be guys, you know? Mm-hmm. And there's a little bit different take at a black barbershop than there is at a white barbershop, having been to both. And there's a little bit different vibe if you go to one that kind of caters to a mixture of both. It just is what it is. And so they really nail that. And I love when we say it's unapologetically black, how Pop's character comes from a bad background. He's from Harlem. He was a street thug who ran with Cottonmouth when they were younger, but sees the error of his ways and is trying to give something back to the community. That rings true with me. There's a lot of people in urban settings, not just black, white, and Latino and Asian, that have similar backgrounds. If you go to any major city, you're from Chicago, so you know what I'm talking about, because Chicago has the same thing. Then you go to the ethnic communities, there's going to be small businesses like that that are owned by people who probably had a bit of a sketchy past in that neighborhood, kind of grew up and got away from their youth and their, you know, silliness and dumbness, and are trying to give back to the community and see their business.
They're going straight now.
Yeah. And they're seeing their business as a way to represent what's right and what the community can be. And Harlem, they bring it up. If you read Marvel, you know as well as I do, because you read Marvel a lot too, because Stan Lee has said it, New York City itself is as much a character as Captain America or Daredevil or Iron Man are to the Marvel Universe. It really is. And that's what's so cool about the different characters of the Marvel Universe that are based in New York City is Hell's Kitchen is as important to Daredevil as Daredevil is. Hell's Kitchen is that section of New York is a character. Well, Harlem is in the Luke Cage comic books, and it is in this show. And I like that. And that's another reason it's unapologetically black, because people, I don't know if you've ever spent any time in New York City, and I admittedly have not spent a lot of time there. I've spent some. No,
I've been in the suburbs. I've been right. To like the Rochester area.
Right, and I've spent some time there, and I lived there for a summer. I lived on Long Island for a summer with my cousin, and I have a lot of friends. I have a couple coworkers actually from the city. One's from Brooklyn, and one's from Manhattan. Harlem, you have to understand and go back historically, and I know this from my history as being a jazz musician. Harlem is the zenith of what inner city African Americans can be and want to be, especially the Harlem of the 1920s during the Harlem Renaissance. We're talking the Langston Hughes, Duke Ellington, Count Basie days, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, for goodness sakes, in the classic blaxploitation movie and song the title song that was written for it by Bobby Womack, Across 110th Street, the line in it is, Harlem is the capital of every ghetto town. That's kind of how a lot of inner city black people, from my understanding, see Harlem, even if they're not from New York, because of that history I'm talking about. And Pops kind of brings that up, and Mariah brings that up, and it shows Harlem is as much a character as Shades and Mariah and Luke are in this thing, and that's really cool. And what they do a better job of in this than they do in Daredevil is both Harlem and Hell's Kitchen have gone through a gentrification process in the last 15, 20 years from what they were in the 70s when Daredevil and Luke Cage were first made comic books. You know, in the 70s, 60s, 70s, Harlem and Hell's Kitchen were both very rough neighborhoods. So it was cool to have a Luke Cage or a Daredevil there. This is not the 1970s Harlem. This is a modern, and it's a little more gentrified, because that's really what is going on in Harlem right now. Remember, that's where the Clintons moved to when Hillary ran for senator from New York. And it's a very upscale area that they live in, and she has her, you know, Bill and her had her office in. If that gives you any idea, that's not the Harlem of Across 110th Street, the blaxploitation movie from 1974. That's a different Harlem, you know, and that's the Harlem right. That we see in this show. You know, there's still shadows of that though there. I mean, it did have a rough, I mean, there are parts of Chicago I know that are going through the same process that were rough back in the 70s, and they're cleaning and gentrifying it up, but there's still those dark shadows there. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, and I've heard people, I don't live in Chicago, but I've been there enough to know a couple of people, but
right.
There are people that credit former Mayor Daley mm-hmm. with being the guy that has really helped clean up some of the rotten areas of Chicago.
Yeah, one of my former bosses, she actually grew up in Cabrini Green, which, you know, for those of you who know what Cabrini Green is, that is the housing project that Good Times, the old 70s sitcom, was based on. That was that rough of a neighborhood. And I understand that area has been going through that same process as of late, according to Rachel, my former boss. So there you go. I mean, it's not uncommon. So I think that when you look at Luke Cage as a bigger picture across the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe and just our world as a whole, I think it speaks well to that. And in a time where we're all so worried about political correctness and we're worried about diversity, social justice warriors need to shut up, because it just is what it is. I mean, there are black communities, and Harlem is considered one of the top, if not the top, black community in the country. And there is nothing wrong with something being presented and portrayed as what I think a lot of people had. And once again, I don't want to get political here. That's not what this podcast is about, right? But that toothpaste is out of the tube as far as Luke Cage is concerned. I think we can agree on that.
Right.
It's very simply this. There are a lot of people that are not of color, and I know this because I'm not of color, and I talk to these people because they see me as their peer, who have not had a lot of interaction of people who are not of color and do not understand why they see things certain ways they do. And they don't get that they buy into stereotypes because they've never allowed themselves to have a diversity within their own relationships. The idea of a streetwise, black, good-looking, positive black role model like Luke Cage, who isn't a college professor but is obviously well-read and reads, that's something that's foreign to them, you know? And so it's like, okay, oh, you're going to tell me that this big, strong, tough guy, he reads Nietzsche. Yeah, what's wrong with that? And there's nothing wrong with that, but you're stereotyping him, and that's why you're blasting on this. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, you're a white redneck. I bet you I could take you to a garage, you know, with a bunch of mechanics who are not college educated and who you would typically stereotype as dumb dudes because they're mechanics. And I bet you one of them's reading classics right now. So people need to quit pigeonholing people based on their educational background or their skin color or whatever. That's the beauty of comic books to me, is that because they do present heroes, they present what can be the greatest of all of us, regardless of all these differences. And Luke Cage is a great example of that. And so not only the comic book, but the show is. And so I think that's where some of the criticism is coming from one side, you know, is that there's this, as the show goes on and you see strong, intelligent, and Cottonmouth's a great example, the Cottonmouth character, as his backstory is portrayed in the show, we find out he was pretty much forced into being an organized crime lord because he wanted to be a musician and had a natural affinity and talent in that field. But it was taken away from him so he could stay in the quote unquote the family business. I think that there are a lot of people, sadly, both black and white, who would just pigeonhole a character like Cottonmouth and go, well, that's not realistic. Yeah, the kid started out as a thug, he's going to stay a thug. No, he's a very complex character. And there's nothing wrong with that, because almost everyone I've ever met, no matter, once again, their ethnic background, is pretty complex. I'm sure you'd say the same thing in your life experiences, wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, nobody's is. You can't be that guy or that gal all the time. There's something more to everybody, really. I mean, there's a few I've met that aren't like that. So that's what I think. It's hard to talk about it. I don't want to give a lot of spoilers because you haven't seen it yet, and this is kind of a one-sided debate. But as you watch the show, and for our listeners that haven't watched it yet or have watched it and are wondering, this is just my thoughts and opinions on it. You know, is that there's a lot of complex characters. Cottonmouth being one, Mariah, Luke himself. Mercedes, Misty Knight, very complex characters that I don't know if people who watch comic book based stuff were expecting that. And then unfortunately and sadly, I do think, once again, not to get political, there are some people out there who stereotype based on race, who that even knocks that home more for them. You know, it's like, oh, that's not realistic. Well, I'm saying that you're very close-minded and you need to open your minds. I mean, if this is the vehicle in which it opens you up, Luke Cage did even more than I thought it did. And I will now get off my soapbox and shut up and let you wrap the show up.
Yeah, I don't know. I definitely cannot add anything more to that other than I did notice, to tie it into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, when that job was going down, with the whole grabbing of the $1 million and all that, you notice the hardware that was being unloaded out of the trucks, they had the Hammer logo on them.
Oh, yes. That is in there. Hammer. And they tied in. I forgot to mention that. They do tie in. Turk, you remember the gun runner that Matt beats up at least a dozen times in the first two? He's a very important supporting character in this, who he even says at one point, to hell with this. I'm going back to Hell's Kitchen. It's too rough here.
So,
there are tie-ins. And the Jessica Jones and him, her shooting Luke with the shotgun, that ties it. That gets mentioned many times. And Rosario Dawson's character, Claire, she comes back eventually. You haven't got those episodes yet.
Right. I did know she was coming, so that's not
And she does. And she's straight out of the comic books. The only difference in the comic book is she's a doctor, not a nurse. So... But there is a definitely a love, tension, sexual tension, interest there between her and Luke at the end of the show, which once again is straight out of the comic books. They are together for a while before him and Jessica in the comics. So, you know, it's very true to the source material. Go back and read the first five. If you don't think it is, and you might change your mind. If you're beefing on it because you see it as unrealistic or too black, I'm saying quit being so close-minded. Look around and think things a little bit. And if that this is the vehicle that gets you to open your eyes up, it did even more. And the last thing I can add, once again, if you are a fan of the MCU as a whole and you're not sold on Luke Cage or you don't know about Luke Cage, it is mandatory watching because you're going to find out the events of this particular show probably have more long-term rippling effects on the entire MCU universe and where they're headed now in the movies than anything else they've done on television to this point, more so than Agents, Daredevil, anything. And I also, just a gut feeling, I think when Punisher gets its own show, it's the same can be said about it as well. I think they're going to be that integral to what they're wanting to do with the MCU. I really do.
All right, on that note, we're going to wind things up. Train, if people want to yell at you about anything you've said here, you can be reached at crazytrain_JB on Twitter.
That is correct, and I know I probably made some enemies and I made some friends, and I welcome both of you's spirited thoughts and comments on what I had to say. I don't back down, but I'm also not mean. I will talk politely.
If you're willing to talk respectfully, because I know, Train, we don't agree on everything. We've had disagreements off mic, sometimes on mic too. But, you know, we if you talk respectfully, you're going to have a discussion. You're not going to have an argument.
Right. I discuss and I debate. I don't, you know, I converse. I don't confront.
We can, of course, be reached on Facebook at A1 Geekville and on Twitter at A1 Geekville. Check out the new website, Geekville Radio. It is still under construction, so it's still in its early stages. But you can see the show notes for this episode at geekvilleradio.com with links to all the stuff we've been talking about. And I do want to remind you folks, we do have a new episode of Examining the Dead coming out this week. It should be available about the time you hear this, where I will make a big announcement about the future of Examining the Dead. And I'll just leave it at that. I can be reached at seth@a1-wrestling.com, podcast@a1-wrestling.com. Next week, we're going to have some pretty controversial topics. We're going to dive back into Star Trek and some of the controversy been going around with the Axanar fan film. So we'll kind of leave that as a hook. So
we're going to jump from politics and racial debate this week to legal legalities next week.
I think we should start having some lawyers on this show.
It sounds like we might need to put a few on retainer. See if we can squeeze that into the budget, okay?
But thank you, folks, for listening. Definitely give us feedback on any of the ways you can, any of the means, Facebook, Twitter, seth@a1-wrestling.com, crazytrain_JB at Twitter. Thank you, folks, for listening. This is the Geekville Podcast, and we will talk to you folks next week.
The Geekville Podcast is not sponsored or endorsed by any of the companies or products discussed unless specifically stated. The views expressed by the hosts and or guests are purely their own and do not represent the views of any sponsors, A1-Wrestling.com, or its affiliates. Music written and performed by Kevin MacLeod can be found at incompetech.com.
We're going to move on to the TV talk. But first off, I want to remind you folks about our affiliate, Amazon. We do have an affiliate link available in our show notes at geekvilleradio.com. Sorry, there's a car driving by. I don't know if you heard that.
They're coming to get you, man. Don't take the blue pill, whatever they tell you. Don't take the blue pill.